A great deal of the world's mystical traditions focuses on the ecstatic, that is to say, the experience of ecstasy, in which the inner, pure, and true self is catapulted out of the physical existence of the body, generally taken to be somehow illusory, to an immediate experience of ultimate reality. That term, ecstasy, ecstatic, is from the ancient Greek meaning something like to stand outside of. Specifically, the illusion of sensation, the physical world, and the temporal embodied existence more generally. Certainly, this experience of ecstasy characterizes a great deal, probably the lion's share, of the world's mystical traditions, and the technologies to achieve this state are frankly as varied as the human experience itself. However, in what may be a truly occult, a hidden subcurrent of mystical theory and practice, are mysticisms of radical embodiment, anti-ecstasis, mysticisms which reject the flight of the soul to some eternal unity, the dejection of the physicality as somehow lesser than, and the search for the absolute elsewhere, anywhere other than the pure corporality of flesh, muscle, and bone. One of the most radical articulations of such a mystical encounter with the absolute through pure embodiment was articulated by one of the greatest writers of the 20th century, Yukio Mishima. In his 1968 essay, Sun and Steel, Taiyo Totetsu, Mishima would expound on this encounter with the absolute through the careful cultivation of his physical body through weightlifting, its fruition in the tragic ideal of communal erotic suffering, and the necessity of death as the culmination of the height of this aesthetic, mystical experience. Of course, viewing his own essay in light of his death through ritual suicide following a failed coup attempt only 2 years after the publication of the essay only further deepens and reveals its profound gravity as a statement of Mishima's commitments to those very ideals. Ideals which remain controversial, even shocking today, over 50 years later. If you're interested in the history of mysticism or the academic study of the occult, make sure to subscribe and check out my other topics on content and esotericism. Also, if you want to support this work of providing accessible, scholarly, and free content on topics in esotericism here for free on YouTube, actually in a place where you can find very little reliable content like this, I'd hope you consider supporting my work on Patreon with a one-time donation, with the super thanks option you can find below the video, or with some merch that you can find over at the store tab on the channel. But now, let's turn to one of the most radically anti-ecstatic philosophies of mysticism, the mysticism of muscle, in Yukio Mishima's Sun and Steel. I'm Justin Sledge, and welcome to Esoterica, where we explore the arcane in history, philosophy, and religion. Now, to be sure, this episode is not going to be an introduction to the life and works of Yukio Mishima. This channel just isn't an introductory level channel in general, but I've included a link in the description to a really wonderful BBC documentary if you want a more full introduction to the life and works of Mishima. But needless to say, he was among the most important Japanese writers of the post-war period. He very nearly won the Nobel Prize on several occasions. And his works are marked by a peculiar, even eerie, uncanny aesthetic in which beauty, eroticism, and death are seamlessly mingled in a style marked by metaphor and obscurity. I'm even told that in the original Japanese works, his language is marked by the use of extremely obscure kanji, even requiring printers to cut new type in some cases, with Mishima rejecting the popular realism of his day for a more quasi-medieval mythological feel. And it is as a writer, and a writer in the fullest sense of that word, that we encounter Mishima toward the end of his life in his 1968 essay, Sun and Steel, Taiyoto Tetsu, Sun and Iron, I think more literally. The essay is, like Mishima, difficult to categorize. It's part autobiography, part philosophical speculation. It's something that he calls confidential criticism. But it is certainly the greatest insight into the underlying philosophical and spiritual issues in their complex interactions through Mishima's life and ultimately through his death that proved to be the inner engine that drove both his literary production, but also his physical development as a bodybuilder, a martial artist, and even an amateur soldier. Sun and Steel is often a difficult text precisely because of what makes it so very important. It's just so wrapped up in Mishima's biography that teasing out anything like a continuous argument is profoundly difficult. Mishima was a novelist primarily, not a philosopher. And life just doesn't take the form of philosophical argumentation, and certainly a life as complex as Mishima's isn't going to be linear and uncomplicated. But Sun and Steel begins in Mishima's first memories of experience itself, experiences which he admits are highly idiosyncratic to himself. Unlike most of us, most people for whom experience comes first, only to be followed much later by words, for Mishima it was the world of words that came first, with physical experience being a distant second. His embodied physicality very much appeared after his encounter with words. And, at least at first, it was a deeply unwanted encounter. Mishima, like most intellectuals, took the physical body to be just a kind of impediment to the mind, something to be escaped, maybe even something to be loathed in the quote of classic Platonic tradition. Thus, the admittedly frail and even sickly Mishima took refuge in the world of ideas and words, which he links with the night, physical weakness, and pallor, pale skin, thus eschewing physicality and embodiment, which he links with the sun. He recalls with profound confusion the sight of men carrying portable Shinto shrines through the streets, bearing the physical weight in an almost rhythmic dance, their eyes locked in rapture at the blue sky above them. The contrast was to the physically weak, the isolated, the nocturnal Mishima, who could only appreciate the same blue sky, but mediated always through words, a barrier which might describe that sky, but it could never really experience it. Though, even as a young person, it seems that Mishima had a sense that the world of ideas, and especially words, provided him with a means of expression, but it also, again, barred the door to experience itself. Perhaps worse than that, words he likened to tiny white ants which gnaw away at experience. That words themselves had a kind of acidic, corrosive impact on experience, such that the very act of description in literature, the thing that he was good at, was destructive of that experience, that literary mediation was the ultimate annihilation of experience itself. For an intellectual, a writer, or a philosopher, such intuition or better, this revelation was extremely concerning. We often conceive of art, such as literature, and especially poetry, as capturing something profoundly true in the human experience. But what if the opposite were the case? That's Mishima's anxiety. What if art, especially the literary arts, only sunk us further into alienation? Worse, Mishima began to suspect that the intellectual priority of the nocturnal, the dejection of the physical body and the reveling in the intellectual world of metaphor and abstraction, was just a kind of spiritual sickness that manifested in the body, that the pallor, the flabby flesh, the hunched posture, and the physical weakness he saw in himself and other nocturnal intellectuals were all symptoms of metaphysical illness, whereby the white ants of words had been allowed to consume experience itself, ironically under the guise of art and truth. But a writer he was, and a damned good one. And so this paradox dwelled within the young Mishima, that is, until his first true encounter with the sun. Aboard a photon-drenched ship in Greece in 1952, Mishima, now in his late 20s, made what he called his handshake of reconciliation with the sun. And he, like many struck by an existential paradox, pendulated, wildly shifted in his experience with the white ants of words and the embodied physicality of the world of the sun, as he called it. He became a member of another race. This may be a reference to author Rimbaud from A Season in Hell. He embraced that very physicality, the sun tanning him and thus making him no longer part of the nocturnal world of mere words. But what did the turn to the sun mean in terms of actual experience? Well, for him, it could mean one thing and one thing only. As the nocturnal night of words was the cultivation of the abstract, the immaterial mind through disaction as words, the world of the sun, on the other hand, must be the cultivation of the concrete, material world of the body in action through steel. The culmination of the nocturnal world was the literary production, the form of which Mishima felt that he had basically solidified through his specific style. But he found the initial culmination of the world of the sun there in photon-drenched Greece as well. In the statues of the classical Greeks, he witnessed the physique, the physical physique, which was the expression of the world of pure action, the world of heroes with bulging muscles that had no need of words whatsoever, but upon which the most beautiful words in all of history had been heaped in epic poetry. It was the physical form of the classical hero that represented the apex of the world of the sun, a wordless physicality born through the experience of muscle and steel, and not mind and words. And in the cultivation of the solar form of physical muscularity, with no mediation through words or thought, Mishima began to seek the absolute of experience and the experience of the absolute. This was truly a mysticism of muscle. Thus, just as ardently as he cultivated himself as a writer, he threw himself into the world of weightlifting and the martial arts. And it was specifically in the realm of the martial arts, especially the Japanese art of fencing, or kendo, that he first perceived that the cultivation of the physical body as a means by which to encounter the absolute, it entailed a further paradox, a deeper paradox still. The work of literature could describe beauty, and even pretend to a kind of faux beauty, a pseudo-beauty itself, but it had the advantage of enduring eternally, at least in some sense. But this eternal, faux beauty of words could only describe, but never experience. It was, by definition, an abstraction which really served to distance the intellectual from the experience of beauty, all the while luring them into believing that this alienation was actually itself beauty and beautiful. As Mishima points out, the eternally beautiful flower must, by definition, be artificial. Anything eternal must be artificial. The eternal world of word and thought could long endure, but only because of its fundamental unreality. Hear just how radically anti-Platonic this is, and this is a point that Mishima himself drives home on several occasions. However, the perfected body cultivated by sun and steel could only have the most precarious, temporal kind of existence. Its ontology was marked by always just barely coming to be, and existing only in those moments beyond all contemplation or interiority. The moment you realized it was there, it was gone. Much less verbal expression. It was the experience of enfleshed muscularity as apophasis. Thus, the apex solar muscular physique appeared in those rare moments when the steel or action born of that steel so purified it that thought itself became impossible. Thus, in the split-second moments when the shout emerged from the gut and the kendo shinai, the fencing sword, split the air, when thought was exactly impossible, or when the body groaned under the agony of the steel being lifted against gravity's insistence otherwise, only in those briefest metaphysical infinitesimals could the solar experience of the absolute be had. But there was a catch still, the impending and certain deterioration, the deteriorating quality of the body, the body's falling apart, no matter the embrace of sun and steel. Simply put, the body was falling apart all the time, and there would be a moment at which it could no longer be perfected. And Mishima lamented that while modern bourgeois society, and that's the language he uses, had allowed for the cultivation and even perfection of the nocturnal world of words, it had done so largely through a social peace, which meant that a powerful foreclosure upon solar perfection was completed. It was impossible at some level. Muscles were no longer really needed to defend your tribe or engage in warfare. And worst of all, the physical perfection of the embodiment was bereft of the only thing that could ensure its most perfect expression. Heroic death. Because the solar coming to be of the physique could only reach its apex in a very, very narrow window in life, and then it only just barely existed then, it became central for Mishima that the culmination of the solar experience of the absolute could only be culminated in a purely fatal autoeroticism of a certain kind. That heroic death at the very peak of physical cultivation through sun and steel, that alone gave the ultimate expression of the solar self. While the nocturnal self seeks eternality through ideation and words, the solar self must undergo annihilation through action and ultimately heroic death. Of course, the encounter of sun and steel prefigured that moment through the pain of physical training, the imitation of fatal combat in the martial arts, or actually just in eroticism more generally. But avoiding that final culmination in physical annihilation, for Mishima it was tantamount to betrayal and an ultimate surrender to the white ants of the words. The nocturnal self abstracted away for fear of it. The solar self craved annihilation in direct proportion to the beauty that they had cultivated precisely in their physique. And in this, Mishima began to reject what so many intellectuals simply take for granted. For instance, he rejected the priority of depth for cherishing what he called surface profundities, literally the outermost layers of skin. Superficial beauty, the most superficial aspect of beauty, relishing in the beauty of the body he had built for himself, modeling in magazines and even playing like Yakuza gangsters in movies and stuff. He was clearly aware that this would appear completely comical to outsiders. But of course, non-heroes always mock heroes because they cannot or will not cultivate their own heroism. They turn to the only power they have, resentment and mockery. The strong admire the spectacular physiques and actions of themselves and others, more importantly. Achilles admired Hector. But it's the weak that relish in the sad passions, as Spinoza had it, of mere verbal disdain. And yes, if you're hearing some Nietzsche and some Bataille at this point, good for you. You're on the philosophy train. Mishima read both of them and admired them deeply, so this is definitely infused with a kind of Bataillean Nietzscheanism, to be sure, no matter what you think of that. Now, you may think that given all this, Mishima would just have abandoned his literary pursuits altogether. I mean, he's part of the race of the solar people now. Well, quite the contrary. He simply took it that his role as a writer was just as much of truth about him as his development of his solar physique. The important distinction was that he no longer relied on words for an experience of the absolute. He could see the words for what they were. Thus, he could just cultivate his literature simply for what it was. In fact, he argues that he's all the better of a writer precisely because he no longer needed to dwell within the nocturnal world of words or rely on them for anything other than what they were good for, descriptions of beauty, not beauty itself. Unlike the tendency toward realism which dominated the authors around him, Mishima's own work maintained and even revels in a kind of dreamlike quality more akin to the No Theater. In fact, he wrote plays for the very ancient No Theater of Japan and the world of medieval legends and myths. That he could live and thrive in two such parallel and seemingly contradictory worlds, the nocturnal world of words and the solar world of muscle, was possible at some level because he appealed to the very long-held Japanese tradition of Bunburyodo, or the harmony of pen and sword, whereby martial and literary skill should be completely combined and harmonized in a true warrior. This is part of the larger idea of Bushido as captured by texts like Hagakure. But this harmony was beset by the reality that Mishima himself was growing older, and at the apex of his literary and his physical development. While pen, sword, night, and day could find some temporary harmony, some detente, the way of the warrior was ultimately still death, or to dwell forever in an increasing twilight, necessary more and more distant from its solar perfection. It was in these contemplations that Mishima began to make his final set of realizations, that the nocturnal world of words was bereft of yet another core element, the group. This is a very non-Nietzschean point, in fact. The cult of night centers on the individual genius, on subjectivity and interiority. It's a world saturated with individual pathos, the focus of the individual on reinforcing that very alienation which forever removes them from the experience of the absolute, at least according to Mishima. Thus, turning to the solar, the cultivation of the individual must be sublimated into the group, whereby all individuality is utterly erased. And it was the warrior band that Mishima thought had accomplished this role most historically. Again, this is tied to his notion of tragic heroic death. The erasure of individuality in the shared suffering of carrying that Shinto shrine, again, remember, allowed the bearers of that shrine to see the blueness of the sky that the weakling Mishima could only describe in words. In fact, Mishima, as part of the on-ramping to this experience, would go on to carry just those shrines. One wonders if he saw the blue sky he was hoping for. But it would be in his martial training that he would reach the near pinnacle, the pinnacle, really, in some sense, of his solar existence. He pulled some connections in the military and was actually allowed to undergo basic training under his birth name and apparently went unrecognized through the process by his peers. The guys that were training for the military just didn't realize they were training with a near Nobel Prize winner for literature. Mishima himself had been rejected from military service, a mistaken diagnosis of consumption. This is something that dogged him his whole life. Surprise, surprise, he had wanted to train for the special attack units, which became known to history as the kamikaze. But it was in those moments, training and shared fatigue soaked through with cold rain, blending into one corporate body through the physicality of martial training, that Mishima affords us his most impactful, momentary, word-free experiences of the absolute. That language of the absolute, that Hegelian language, that's his own usage. Indeed, it was during his training and flight in a Lockheed F-104 starfighter jet that he records one of his only moments where his literary world of thought and the solar of world of action would meet in experience. He describes how the cultivation of meditative thought needed to endure the G training for his flight was eventually coupled with that actual flight into the upper reaches of the sky, more than 45,000 feet up at Mach 1.3, a world at the very limits of human survival. It's ultimately ensconced on all sides by immediate death. And it's there, surrounded by life and death, that the two worlds met. In fact, there in those heights, he perceived the experience as a titanic snake consuming its own tail, the image of the alchemical Ouroboros, where opposites reconcile and night and day fused, mental words and physical actions were unified for perhaps the once and only moment of his short life hitherto. Sun instills a work of mysticism, I would argue, a mysticism very nearly unique in the history of mysticism itself, a mysticism which not only rejects words and thoughts, which many mysticisms do, that's just apophatic mysticism, but it's what he embraces. It's one that embraces radical physicality as cultivated by tremendous focus on the cultivation of the muscular physique. It's a true mysticism of flesh. Mishima's experience in the upper air, while profoundly recorded in Sun and Steel, were clearly not enough for him, however. Even such a limit experience was not and could not be the culmination of pure solar embodiment. Mishima transformed himself into a work of art. His physical body became a work of art, and like all works of art, they must be curated to be properly exhibited and thus appreciated. But this work of art was to prove truly ephemeral because, remember, on Mishima's reasoning, it must come to its aesthetic apex precisely in annihilation. Like many others, I suspect that Mishima's attempted coup with members of his militia, the Tatanokai or Shield Society, was him simply and very finely curating that very annihilation, that heroic death that he had searched out. Thus, sun and night, steel and words culminated in a final day, whereby Yukio Mishima, having neatly concluded the nocturnal words of his Sea of Fertility tetralogy, transformed himself into a solar headless god, an akephalos, that, despite the sounds of jeering soldiers and a frankly botched attempt at seppuku, reality just always impedes upon even the most careful curation in the end. As I said, Mishima's Sun and Steel is a fascinating and frankly at times terrifying glimpse into not only the development of one of the most important literary figures of the 20th century, but also an insight into a radical, self-described, anti-Platonic mysticism, whereby the absolute is experienced precisely and only through the development of embodiment. And not just through embodiment, but the deliberate cultivation of that embodiment through years of difficult and painful training, only to have it culminate in its intentional annihilation as pure aesthesis. Now, I'm certainly not arguing that we should in any way emulate Mishima, but as he is appreciated in the world of literature, I think Sun and Steel must come to be appreciated equally as a work of philosophy and as a work of mysticism. In fact, a work of mysticism that has very little in the way of parallels. And in that way, it's certainly just worthy of attention by scholars and practitioners of mysticism. So, with all that said, I'm gonna go, it's deadlift day, it's leg day around here, so I'm gonna go do the right thing and not skip leg day. Gonna take this tie off and I'm gonna go enjoy some sun and steel myself. Until next time, I'm Justin Sledge, and thank you for watching Esoterica, where we explore the arcane in history, philosophy, and religion.